Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Elaine B. and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Today's date is Monday, May 9th, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting. Today, we're reading from the Big Book and we are on page 2, the second paragraph, which begins with, "By the time I had completed," and ends with, "discovered many more reasons later on." Today's readers are Rhonda R. for the 12 Steps, Juanice N. for the 12 Tradition, Jordan L. as our reader, and Kara L. with page 164, and Shelley E. is our backup today. DOA preamble. Oh, the reference number for yesterday's meeting, or for this morning's 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, is 18935. That's 18935. And our last meeting, which was last Friday, I'm getting all confused here, was 18936. That's 18,936. And I think I reversed both of those. So this morning's meeting would be 1936. Please forgive me. 18936 for this morning's 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, and last Friday was 18935. Thank you very much. Sorry for the confusion. DOA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals whose shared experience, strength, and hope are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any outside public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At A Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through the abstinence and practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I will now ask Rhonda R. to please read those 12 steps.
Thank you for your service, Elaine. Good morning, everyone. This is Rhonda R., grateful recovered compulsive eater in Georgia. The 12 steps. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And thank you for allowing me to do service today.
Thank you very much, Rhonda R. And I'll now ask Juanice N. to please read the 12 traditions for us.
Good morning. My name is Juanice N. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Southern California. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you, and I pass.
Thank you very much, Wani San. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery that are described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature and stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we're discussing and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There's no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We're sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book. We are on page 2, the second paragraph in Bill's story. And I will ask Jordan L. to please read for us.
Good morning. My name is Jordan L. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Denison, Colorado, and very grateful to be abstinent and on a meeting of Overeaters Anonymous this morning. Bill's story. By the time I had completed the course, I knew the law was not for me. The inviting maelstrom of Wall Street had me in its grip. Business and financial leaders were my heroes. Out of this alloy of drink and speculation, I commenced to forge the weapon that one day would turn in its flight like a boomerang and all but cut me to ribbons. Living modestly, my wife and I saved $1,000. It went into certain securities, then cheap and rather unpopular. I rightly imagined that they would someday have a great rise. I failed to persuade my broker friends to send me out looking over factories and managements, but my wife and I decided to go anyway. I had developed a theory that most people lost money in stocks through ignorance of markets. I discovered many more reasons later on. Oh, Bill. I relate greatly to Bill, and it's funny because when I first started reading this Big Book, I couldn't. I didn't really understand what Bill's story had to do with me at all. But when I start to read this paragraph between the lines, I see things like out of this alloy, I commenced to forge the weapon that one day would turn in its flight like a boomerang and all but cut me to ribbons. I can relate to that. I can relate to alloys. My alloy isn't necessarily drink and speculation. My alloy was food and good grades in school. That was my weapon. That was my weapon against the world. And it was really it was really the basis for where my compulsive overeating developed and really took off, you know. And so like a boomerang, it takes off and it's going away from me at first, right? And it's my weapon and it's protecting me from the world and all the seeming hostility within it. But like a boomerang, it turns and it comes back at me later on, and it all but cuts me to ribbons. So when I start reading this stuff between the lines, I start to understand what it is that they're talking about. And like his, like Bill's great rise, I can definitely relate to that. I still think I'm going to have a great rise. We'll see it one of these days. And the development of his theory and him going out anyway, even despite the, you know, the recommendations of his friends or whatnot. Bill's out there. He's doing it on self-will. He is doing this deal on self-will and commencing to forge that weapon, you know, and developing it. And just to put this in like contextual history real quick, this is, we're talking about before the Great Depression here, you know. So Bill, he really thinks he's got this stock market thing figured out. The whole country did, right? Like, this was the time in history when everyone was spending and spending and spending like it was going to last forever. Like, that supply of money was just going to go on and on and on. So, thank you for letting me share. That's all I got.
Thank you very much, Jordan L. So though we value everybody's experience, we do ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So if you haven't shared since last Wednesday, we'd love to hear from you. Please press star 1 to unmute. Let me know your name.
Melanie Bruce E.
A. I heard Melanie C. and Bruce E.
Jason K.
Catherine O.
Kathleen O, and I heard somebody B, I believe.
Tamara C.
Robin
Lisa.
P. Robin P. and Alisa. Lisa.
Lisa
original.
M.
Lisa M. That's a great lineup. Okay, so if you're not Melanie C, please press star 1. I do have Bruce E, Jason K, Kathleen O, Tamara C, Robin P, and Lisa M following Melanie C. Please share with us, Melanie.
Hey, good morning. Elaine, good morning, everyone. My name is Melanie C. I'm recovered in Canby, Oregon. Thank God. I was taught to look at the first 8 pages of Bill's story as ways in which I could relate in my compulsive overeating life. How did he think? How did he feel? How did he behave? And were there any similarities? Because I had a difficult time being a compulsive overeater, you know, really relating to this as a story. I just looked at the story. I didn't dig deep enough to see the details of the twisted mind, the obsessive mind, the self kind of thinking, the grandiose type of way of thinking, because I thought everybody thought that way. That's the only reference that I had inside my body and inside my mind. Doesn't everybody feel this way? Everybody think this way? So when I go to kind of tear this apart, I look at the idea of what had me in its grip? What was I thinking? Where was my mind just going off, the daydreaming that I was doing and the huge things that I felt like I was going to be able to do? Well, I went back over and I saw many, many things that I started out just that way, huge things, and being advised against it or wanting to start at 0 and be at 90 and not do the steps in between. All the time, it happened to me all the time, and I failed over and over and over again. So when that no longer worked and I couldn't eat enough food to get drunk enough to completely be zoned out in a blackout, I started driving other people to do that for me. I drove a husband he got stocks in the very first job he ever had, and we speculated on those, and they grew, and they were going to be great things. And I kept driving and driving and driving as I was hiding deeper and deeper and deeper. And so I look at this idea about the alloy, the mixture of eating and driving, eating and speculating on who and what was going to do something for me, because I knew that I couldn't do it. I was getting fatter, I was eating more, and I could not get out of it. And I became angrier and angrier, and driving him harder and harder and harder. It just became absolutely heartbreaking to see that, burying myself and my conscience and my intuition underneath all of that, so I couldn't see what my heart and soul was really having me do. It was absolutely heartbreaking. And again, I wanted to share, I couldn't get drunk enough in the food to erase and blot out the confusion. I didn't have a clue with me, and especially in this particular paragraph that describes Bill, is that it was a disease untreated, the mind of an addict untreated for so many decades, and it's taking a bit to pull out. But thank God there's a methodology by which it is absolutely being pulled out, and a power greater that's soothing and healing my soul. With that, I pass.
Oh, thank you very much, Melanie C. Bruce E., you are up next, and you're followed by Jason K.
Yeah, hi, Bruce E. in Florida, recovered in Florida. Yeah, well, at this point for Bill, things are going along pretty good. You know, he's able to use the alcohol and still make money. And it says here, he completed the course. I knew that law wasn't for me. Why wasn't law for him? Because it wasn't exciting enough, you know. That was boring stuff. You know, he wanted this excitement of Wall Street. The maelstrom, that powerful whirlwind, which, you know, was going to start, it's going to go be going down on him. The whirlwind's going to work its way down, you know, like going down a drain. But right now it's just, you know, going around in circles for him. But it had him in his grip. So he sees these business and financial people. You know, he sees the people that are making the money. He knows that people are losing money too, but he's not focused on them. He's focused on the people that are making all the money, and he wants to be like them. And this drinking and speculation was working, you know. So my, at first, my, and it hadn't turned, and eventually it's going to turn on its flight like a boomerang, cut them to ribbons. But my food consumption in the beginning was pretty good. You know, I could do it. I could have fun with it and eat with other people and overeat and eat a lot and didn't gain too much weight. And, you know, it didn't get me so much in the beginning. But, man, eventually here it cut me like ribbons, you know, like a boomerang that came back. And I heard somewhere that Bill had been practicing a boomerang when he was a kid at his grandfather's house, and he threw it out and it came back and went through a window. So he's got some experience there in this. So it did that to me, man. It just cut me to ribbons. At first, you know, it was good, and then it started sucking me in until pretty soon I was addicted to the food and couldn't get away from it. And It just came back and just like a boomerang. So he goes out, he saves $1,000. He's doing great. I rightly imagine they would make a great rise, which they may have been. He's going out on his own with his wife. You know, he's riding this big ego wave, and it went anyway. Developed a theory that most people lost money in stocks through ignorance of markets. I discovered many more reasons later on. So what were the reasons later on? Well, one was he became an alcoholic and couldn't get things right. You know, he kept screwing everything up. But, well, thank you. And I pass.
Well, thank you very much, Bruce E. And Jason K., you're up next, followed by Kathleen O.
Good morning. This is Jason K., recovered compulsive eater from Pennsylvania. And looking at Bill's story, I always love to look at the trajectory. You know, he has this early on, he has a certain amount of power and his ego is working for him in the sense that he's talking about this fierce determination, this desire to prove the world wrong, to strike out on his own and to make money, lots and lots of money. So is he living his life on a spiritual basis? Absolutely not. What is he worshiping? What is he turning his thoughts to and his mind to and his actions and his entire orientation of his person? His heroes are these financial leaders. He's living life on this materialistic plane. And this is what we have to relate to in our own stories. How did we live our lives leading up to our final surrender, our surrender into this program? What did we worship? I love this word worship, and I heard a definition is what we obsessively turn our thoughts and our mind and our attention to continuously over and over again. And to put that into to practice and to make it personal to us, what did we worship? Did we worship in our life story the approval of others? Did we worship success and money? Did we worship relationships and seeking security through people or finding the right person? And we all have our stories of this misguided, ego-driven, trying to arrange life and people and circumstances to suit our needs. And on some level, our society, our culture, you know, my parents, people tell us that's the purpose of life. That's the purpose of life, to go, to make something of yourself, to do something with yourself. And this is the pride, the arrogance that we carry sometimes, and the selfishness. And this is part of a trajectory. This is a progressive illness. Bill's going to be circling the toilet here. And so in terms of his life, he has a certain amount of power to save that money, to show some success. And we'll see later on how that all goes to naught. But the question for today, for what do we make of this when we're, you know, I have 4 years of recovery, how do I relate this to this today? You know, now that I've found a secure place in my recovery, what am I worshiping today? Am I checking my Bank of America balance more than I'm checking in with God? Am I looking to go and achieve? Do I say, I have this accident, this recovery thing down, I'm good, now I'm going to build a business, now I'm going to get that financial success? So for me today, I take this to heart in terms of what I'm worshiping. Am I really constantly turning my thoughts to love and to service, how I can help others? And I'll leave us with this final thought. There's a part of the big book that says we constantly remind ourselves we're no longer running the show. Bill, in this passage, is trying to run the show. So my intention today is to constantly remind myself I'm no longer running the show, and to humbly submit and surrender to God's will and guidance and care and direction in my life. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you very much, Jason K. Kathleen O., you're up next, followed by Tamara C.
Thank you, Elaine. Thank you for your service this morning. Thanks, everyone, for your great shares. Kathleen O., recovered in Northern California. So Bill's getting rich, or he's thinking that getting rich is going to solve all his problems. And, you know, he has a lot of stinking thinking going on, and I can totally relate to that. So he says, I had developed a theory that most people lost money in stocks through ignorance of markets. I discovered many more reasons later on. Yes, those reasons were alcoholism. And I, too, had many theories. You know, I was always coming up with crazy ideas to justify my actions. And, you know, the bottom line is the progression of the disease was denial. It's a cunning, baffling, and powerful, you know. I personally spiraled down to the depths of despair, as, you know, we're going to find out Bill does, too. And this part of Bill's story is self-will run riot. You know, who is he fooling but himself? His ego is all over these pages, and it's speaking loudly. I, me, me, me. And boy, can I relate to that. And, you know, thank God for recovery, because I was always shooting myself in the foot. And like Bill, I could justify, I could deny and rationalize. Like he could do that being an alcoholic. I could do the same in regard to my out of control eating. And also like Bill, what was blocking me was, you know, calamity, pomp, arrogance, worship of other things. All Bill is thinking about is getting rich. And that seems to be how he judges himself. You know, eventually he gets to the concept that it's about your integrity and not about your bank account. And I sometimes, you know, think that God was doing for Bill what he couldn't do for himself. If Bill had become rich in the stock market, would he have died of alcoholism? Probably. Would this book ever have been written? Probably not. So this is a really great example of when things don't go my way, it's because God has a better idea, and I need to trust and rely on this higher power. You know, worshiping something of human aid will make us vulnerable to the world, and I needed something greater than myself, and so did Bill. So, you know, when we're always thinking about ourselves, we're blocking ourselves from the power. And thank God Bill wasn't successful in the stock market, or I probably wouldn't be here today. And I know for me, I had to challenge my old ideas. I had to think honestly, search diligently within myself. And I had to make a decision to do this work. You know, my biggest challenge was to quit playing God. I heard someone say once, God isn't my co-pilot, God is my Uber driver. So learning to live this spiritual life, it wasn't difficult, it was just different. But it's no longer difficult thanks to working these steps. And with that, I pass. Thanks, Elaine.
Thank you very much, Kathleen O. Tamara C., you're up next, followed by Robin P.
Good morning. Thank you, Elaine. Good morning, everyone. Tamara C., I'm very grateful to be a recovered compulsive overeater, and I'm in California. I am so appreciating all these shares. I'm just identify so much with what everybody's saying. And I really love that sentence. That's a great sentence about, you know, the alloy of drink and speculation and then all, turning and all but cutting into ribbons. So, yeah, an alloy is a combination of elements. And so one of my elements is food, eating, but that other elements that forged this weapon of self-destruction were self-reliance, perfectionism, and definitely like getting my value and security from my own performance, my achievement, the image that people have of me, and from my circumstances. And I definitely have had all these grandiose ideas of securing my worth and safety. Because when I was growing up, I didn't feel worthy and I didn't feel safe. So I thought it was my job to make that happen through enough self-discipline by figuring out for myself how I'm supposed to live and using my own resources, always pushing myself to do more and be more. And of course, I cannot live up to my grandiose ideas, so I blamed my circumstances and other people. And my solution, which was food, it did turn on me. It was once my friend, and it became my enemy. Just ended up with so many health problems and in isolation and full of self-loathing and this constant sense of impending doom. And food was no longer my source of comfort. It really wasn't even giving me that effect anymore, but I just kept eating anyway because I didn't know what else to do when I was chasing that effect of I'm going to be okay, I'm going to be okay. And so I just kept eating. And when I gave up, and I found, then I worked the steps. I gave up the food as my friend. I worked the steps. I found a new source through the steps. And I got connected to a power that never turns on me, but it's always there for me and always comforting me with the truths that I am enough. I am safe. I get to be human. And in my imperfection, I also get to be useful. And I'll pass.
Thank you very much. Tamara C. and Robin P., you're up next. You'll be followed by Lisa M.
Thank you so much, Elaine, and everyone who makes this meeting possible. I'm Robin P. I'm a very grateful recovered compulsive overeater, and I am in Costa Rica. And, you know, when I was in my 20s and 30s, I starred on Broadway and for my living. And I was born with this huge singing voice. And I also was born into a family of a lot of abuse and addiction. And I felt so far below everyone, so much shame that I felt if I looked like I starred on Broadway, that would be the great equalizer. And I would feel like I was as good as they were. And but meanwhile, I hid. It's such a disease of isolation and that mental obsession. I would literally go to the theater, ride my bike to the theater on Broadway, do my shows, and ride my bike back, and then close the door to my apartment and hide. And then someone 12-stepped me right before I moved to Broadway with one of a big show with a bunch of pop stars in. And I got abstinent and started working the program. And 2.5 years later, changing addictions is like changing rooms on the Titanic. I'm still in a stateroom. I'm still going down if I don't deal with the other isms. That's my experience. I went back out over a relationship and just total obsession took over in a different room on the Titanic. And I could not get back in until I came to this wonderful A Vision for You 6 years ago and got abstinent by God's grace and mercy. And during that time, I left Broadway, became an inventor, all of these things, you know, became and brought products to market, all of these things that I thought were going to, if I could just use my gifts for good, everything would be fine. And using my gifts for good without being abstinent and without having a sober mind is like hell in the hallway. It was at times just burning myself out, pushing so hard. All of this self will run riot in different ways. And yes, they were products that helped people. But in the meanwhile, because I wasn't doing it abstinently, I almost burnt myself out. And now today, living abstinently and healthily and soberly, with a sober mindset, I mean, you know, it's just such a huge, am I on the same planet? And it's like God gave me a take two, you know, here you go again. Here's mercy and grace. And it's a whole different world, you know, of health and happiness and service with God. With, you know, oh my goodness, and having people in my life and with God and my fellows. I am so grateful. God bless everybody with a very blessed abstinent day. Thank you. Thank you all. I'm sending you big hugs.
Thank you, Robin P. So agree. God and fellows. Thank you, God. Okay. Lisa M., you're up next. And after Lisa, we will take another share on page 2. The second paragraph, which begins with, by the time I had completed, and ends with, discovered many more reasons later on. Please share with us, Lisa M.
Thank you. I'm Lisa M. I'm from San Diego, California, recovered. And what I love about this paragraph is I can see the gifts that he had and how they were perverted and distorted by his alcoholism. And I came to OA early. I had known because my mom was in OA about what I had, and I knew what the solution was. I still didn't come until I was 19 and desperate. But I had all these, they were different hopes and aspirations. I had already quit my job to be an actor by the time I was 22, but I didn't have the same like, oh, I got to have money, but I had hopes and aspirations, and I had the idea that I was going to be something, and how can I do it, and here's the way, and even had this sense of a spiritual solution with God, and like consulted that and prayed, and what am I going to do with my life, and what am I going to be, and even with periodic recovery, because I would pick up the steps and put them down. Even with periodic recovery, that doesn't work. Half measures availed me nothing. What strikes me about the paragraph is that all my gifts, all my things that I had that God did give me and did want me to bring into the world got twisted. And that's why I love the boomerang image, because it turns back on me and cuts me to ribbons. So he's got some really great things in here. He's smart. He's intuitive. He's got business acumen. He, you know, thinking outside the box, and he's figuring out the markets and doing things other people aren't willing to do. And I mean, he's got all kinds of gifts, and yet the self-will and I love that it's a mixture of the drink and speculation. It's the drink and the excitement and the rev and the whole mix of this big, busy time is mixing up into a mess. And that's how I was, that I couldn't use my gifts for good because the things that I had that were in my favor couldn't be expressed and developed in the world because of my eating addiction. And thank God I have this line, and thank God I have all of you to be able to take the things that are good about me and try to bring them into the world in a way that God wants them expressed. And I pass.
Thank you very much, Lisa M. So though we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So if you haven't shared since last Wednesday and you'd like to comment on the second paragraph on page 2, Bill's story, by the time I had completed, please press star 1 to unmute. Give me your name. We have time for 4, maybe 5 shares. Deborah
Ann B.
I heard Ann B. and somebody else at the same time.
Deborah G.
Deborah G. Anybody else?
Stephen
D.
Stephen G. Toronto.
Stephen G. Toronto. And we may have time for a brief share after that. I'm not sure. Anybody else want to get on the list just in case?
Liz A.
Liz A. Awesome. Okay. So we've got Ann B., Deborah G., Sue Ann D., Stephen G., and Liz A. Thank you so much. Okay, Ann B., please share with us. You're followed by Deborah G.
Hi, this is Andy, compulsive overeater. I don't like that word, recovered, but I have been abstinent for 17 years. And I am in Westchester United Intergroup in New York. When I first joined program, this chapter of the big book was kind of my weakness. It was so scary to me, the idea that a person could be wealthy and then lose everything in the stock market crash. And that partly came from, you know, my father's refugee experience and my mother's experience in the Depression too. I really would skip this chapter every time I opened the big book. I did not want to look at it. And then we had a stock market crash in 2008, and I lived through it, and I survived, and it was scary, but I had enough. My higher power took care of me, and I can read this chapter. And that's really one of the things that I get out of program is that fear is not, you know, false evidence appearing real, and that I have to trust my higher power to take care of me, and my higher power did, you know, that's for me the program message that I get at. Although I too was somebody who thought my life was going to go better than it did after I finished college and graduate school, and it didn't go so well. But I'm still here and I'm still okay, you know, even though my career failed, my marriage failed, my kids turned out to be special needs, you know, I'm still here and I got cancer. I'm still here and I'm still abstinent and my higher power is still taking care of me and I still have a home and I still have food and I'm probably happier than I've ever been. So I'll pass.
Wow, that's great. Great to hear. Thank you very much, Andy. Deborah G., you're up next, followed by Sue Andy.
Oh, thank you so much.
I'm Deborah G. from Arizona, and thank you so much for your leading us this morning and all those that have made this meeting possible. And everyone shares 12-stepping me today. And welcome, welcome, welcome to all the newcomers. I'm so glad you're on the phone today. Yes, being so filled with self-centeredness, even today, self-centeredness continues to crop up. I could relate to Bill and his thinking so much. And the, you know, what happened with that self-centeredness, it manifested in my behavior, you know, the thinking and then the behavior, my decisions, you know, the unmanageability because of that thinking. And so the only thing that I knew to do, ease and comfort, was the food. It gave me that relief for a little bit, but it, you know, the boomerang back at me, the unmanageability, how it was affecting my thinking again and my behavior again and my decisions and my life, you know, all the areas in my life. And no matter what it might be, money and relationships and being of use and all those things, just, you know. And so I'm so grateful today that I have these beautiful 12 steps, that I have this program that gives me a different solution. There is a solution. And living this way of life, to deal with that, to have something that I can use when that self-centeredness pops up again, I don't have to go to the food. I can go to a 10th step. I can get back in alignment and connected with my source, with that power. Because I have no power, but there's power in that power in step two. There's power in that 10th step that can help me, that can relieve me from that suffering so I don't have to go into food. Wow. I'm so grateful and so blessed to be able to have this. Thank you. Thank you so much. And all of you, thank you.
Thank you very much, Deborah G. in Arizona. Sue Ann D., you're up next, followed by Stephen G.
Hi, this is Sue Ann D. from the Hudson Valley in New York. I am a recovering compulsive overeater, and I thank everyone who makes this meeting possible for their service and their consistency. The word that jumped out at me from this reading was maelstrom. That's how I felt my life was, just filled with maelstrom on a daily basis, where I felt powerless. My world was spinning, and I was filled with fear and anxiety. So much so that I had to take medication for it. And the thing that has brought me hope has been my ability to stay in program for 17 years. Even though I didn't have abstinence, I just kept going to meetings. And finally, about 6 months ago, I had a spiritual awakening, and it's still coming and going, but it's coming more than it's going. And I'm on my 10th step now, and the self-centeredness that I have, that I think has gone, comes out clearly in my 10th step. So I really need to examine when I write a 10th step to keep my self-centeredness out of it and to just look at what is my part and how my behavior is such that I cause other people or I cause my own resentments, and I cause myself to be disappointed and lost, and instead use my 10th step to really focus on how I can be a better person, how I need to make amends, and how I need to get my feelings onto paper so that I can really feel them. Thank you. I pass.
Thank you very much, Sue Ann D. And Stephen G., you'll be our final share for today. Liz A., we really hope we get to hear you another time. So, Stephen G., please share with us.
Good morning. This is Stephen G. from Recovered Compulsive Overeater in Toronto, Canada. Out of this alloy of drink and speculation, I commenced to forge the weapon. The Big Book is amazing in many ways, because the more times we read it, we get a different understanding. In the past, I didn't really understand this idea of this alloy of drink and speculation, but I now see it as this is the combination of his addictive substance plus self, with a capital S. And he uses that self to go out into the world and get a feeling of security and feeling of approval from people, places, and things. And both of these things are used to treat the underlying spiritual illness, which is the restlessness, the irritability, and the discontentedness. And as the disease progresses, as it did in me, eventually, as it states later on in the book, we get to a point where we can neither imagine a life with alcohol or without. Can't imagine a life with compulsive overeating or a life without. And then we're at the jumping off point. And the only solution to that is a spiritual experience. And the main obstruction to that spiritual experience is this second part of the alloy, which I had spent my whole life building up and building up, which is this selfishness, self-centeredness, self-seeking, self-delusion, and self-reliance. And thankfully, it's only the steps that allowed me to break those things down and eventually be humble enough to have a spiritual experience that solved the problem. And so I'm so grateful to that. But yeah, this is, I now see, was my whole problem my whole life, which was the alloy of the addictive substance, in my case, food, and self. And eventually it became clear that self was my biggest problem. And thank God I have the tools or the steps or the actions to take every day to get rid of that self and access to higher power. Thanks for listening.
Thank you very much, Stephen G., and everybody who has shared. Just a fabulous meeting. So we'll now close the meeting by reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Kara L. please read A Vision for You?
Good morning, this is Kara L., recovered compulsive overeater. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of the of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you.